for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, welcome in to Inside Utah Politics. Today, I am your host, Lindsay Ayres. If you're seeing us for the first time here, welcome on in. We typically tape this show in a streaming format, so we'd invite you on Amazon Fire, Roku, or Apple TV to download the News for Utah Plus app. We have a lot to get to in Utah Politics this week, some big news over Utah's redistricting case. Let me start by introducing my panelists, Taylor Morgan and Leah Murray. Hi, guys.
Hey, hello. Lindsay.
How are we? Deep breaths, everyone. Deep breaths.
It's a Tuesday.
It's been a week in Utah politics, that's for sure. Tell us what you do.
Oh, I'm a professor, so let's just be clear. It's not really a week in my life because Thanksgiving week, we're all just chillaxing.
Not just a professor, but the director of the Walker Institute
also
of Politics.
Award-winning professor.
And there's that, too.
That's right. And then there's Taylor.
Yeah. Let's just go with that.
Partner at Morgan May Public Affairs, their consulting and lobbying firm.
Thank you.
Let's dive right in. The news of the week is the fact that the Utah legislature, the majority, I should say, in the legislature, has come out now and kind of unveiled their plans for us on how they want to try to overturn this redistricting ruling in some capacity. And they've sort of launched this three-pronged approach, if you will, to do it. Those are my words, not theirs. But essentially, they're saying they're going to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot in 2026, which, according to them, they hope will solidify officially in the Constitution, although they believe that it's already there, that the legislature draws the districts. Okay, so we solidify that, sort of like Amendment D, but a little bit different. And then they're also going to hold a special session on November 9th to... December 9th to address some of the election-related deadlines, filing deadlines and such. The governor is going to call them into that. And then they're also appealing the decision, a full merits appeal of the redistricting decision.
Is there anything they're not doing?
Well, then
Lindsay?
There's the GOP initiative. So one of those things has got to stick, right? Taylor, tell me which path you think is the most likely to stop this map, this train from going down the tracks.
Yeah, this is what we call the kitchen sink approach here. We're trying anything and everything we can possibly think of to try to deal with the plaintiff's map with this first district. Now, I have been very critical of how the legislature has handled this redistricting battle from day one. I think where we are today is a product of how the legislature has gone about picking all the wrong fights at the wrong times and, frankly, has lost all of them. Now, I fundamentally disagree with the map that was chosen by Judge Gibson. I also believe, as I've expressed on the show before, that that was a political choice. It's almost as if we've had political grenades being lobbed from the legislature and now from the bench with Judge Gibson picking the plaintiff's map, and the rest of Utah is on fire here in the middle. Now, make no mistake, District 1, this map, the plaintiff's map, is, in my eyes, the most egregious partisan gerrymander in modern history. Now, Leah's laughing, okay? But,
we'll
Professor... Democrats pretend to like the facts, and so let me provide some facts to back up what I just said. Of Utah's total registered voters today, only 14% of all active registered voters in Utah are Democrats.
Okay, but active registered voters doesn't mean people who vote.
It
just means people who are registered
Democrats,
with the party.
Lindsay,
it just means people
continue.
Who are registered.
According to the Better Utah Institute, which is a Democratic organization here in Utah, 52% of the registered voters in the first congressional district are Democrats.
Okay, but
you tell me how we go from 14% statewide Democrats to 52%
because there
of
are
one
Republicans and independents who vote
only,
Democratic.
But Lindsay, if we take those 500,000 unaffiliated voters and you want to apply the same percentages statewide among Democrats and Republicans, you don't get 52% Democrats in that district. You do not. It is by definition a partisan gerrymander. In Salt Lake County, countywide, there are only 22% Democrats in the entire county. How do you get to 52% Democrats in one congressional district? You get there by packing in a partisan gerrymander. It is egregious, and that is why, even though I have been critical of the Utah legislature, the map is so bad, and it is such a terrible, just wacky gerrymander that the legislature has to do anything and everything they possibly can to undo this Democratic power grab.
Leah, Taylor did not answer my question, which was which path is going to stick here for the Republicans to stop what Taylor is calling an egregious gerrymander?
Right. I mean, I think the question, or that begs the question, right, Lindsay, of the timeline, right? So a little bit, I think people are mounting their campaigns for this district set. People are figuring out who's going to run in these districts, where they're going to file. Our legislature has a filing deadline, I think, of New Year's Day.
January 2nd. Right? Like yeah.
It opens, the first week of January.
Insanely close, right, happening. So a little bit, I don't know that anything pauses well enough what's happening for the 2026 election. So I think going forward, the right path, and that's not what you asked, but I'll just add, the right path is getting a constitutional amendment that brings the power of districting back into the legislature. And a little bit, right, they should just kind of say, this one's a goner. We'll just let this go.
Just run one cycle under this map.
We will fix this. In the next one, we will have a president at the top of the ballot. All of our people will come out to vote for that Republican president. We'll have a higher voter turnout, and we'll get the seat back. That's not what you asked, but that feels like the most plausible, rational, reasonable way to do this.
I think there is an attitude of, we hope that it will be stopped before 2026, but we don't know if any of these paths can.
Yeah.
I want to bring in what I asked the governor today, because, or earlier this week, because I talked to the governor, he had a press conference with a bunch of reporters, and I obtained a grandma request that shows me some of the communications between county clerks and the lawmakers who are kind of hatching this plan in terms of what we change in the special session. The governor's going to call in the legislature to do what? Well, the lawmakers didn't really answer that today, but what the emails show is that they're considering a handful of plans to push back the filing deadlines, either just for congressional candidates or potentially every candidate. But when you do that, starts a domino effect of pushing it closer to the county conventions.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And for signature gathering candidates, you don't have enough time to gather the requisite number of signatures before those conventions. So we would have to change those as well. So I asked the governor a little bit about what the plan was.
I would say, I think there's less discussion about the signature piece and changing those sort of thresholds. It's just trying to figure out how we can make it all work under the deadlines. And that's been one of my concerns from the very beginning. I've expressed that because of the deadlines, we just don't have a lot of room to move on this and to be able to file an appeal to move that process forward. So we're looking at those deadlines and what it means. Really, it's more just you kind of have to back up. So you have an election in November, right? We know that's set. There are deadlines you have to make to reach that. And so you just keep working backwards. And so what's the latest possible date that you could get a ruling from the Supreme Court and still be able to implement maps? If there's a change in maps, if the Supreme Court was to go back to map C, then you would need 50 days to get that implemented, right? So there's a whole bunch of variables there. And that's what the attorneys are looking at now. That's why we don't have any additional information on what that might look like. If we could do it.
Okay, so basically he's saying there, we don't know which plan we're going to put forward yet because we got to count back from the election.
They haven't figured it out yet. Yeah. I think that is the simple answer here, is they don't know exactly how they're going to do this. I think they have a general framework. They have some ideas. But look, any time you start getting into the election timeline and you start trying to adjust things, it is nearly impossible. As someone who has worked for years in the state elections office as an election administrator, also working on multiple citizens initiatives and working on, the signature process and multiple campaigns, statewide, local, countywide, congressional, I'll tell you what, there is not one extra day to be found in this election process timeline. Utah's elections are the gold standard in our country. Our process isn't perfect. No process is perfect, but I get, despite all my bluster and how excited I get about how bad I think the new map is, frankly, I think we're stuck with it. Right. I get very, very uncomfortable anytime we start confusing the election timeline in voters' minds. That, to me, is a very dangerous can of worms to open.
Yeah, Leah, to that point, does this confuse voters? I mean, this is really for candidates and when they file, yeah. But what impact does it have?
Well, also a little bit, like, how inside baseball has this whole conversation
absolutely
been, right?
Right. Yeah.
So if you were just a normal voter, what? First of all, you just think those districts are done, right? So I think a lot of voters are just thinking, who's going to be the candidates, and isn't this interesting? We've got this district. Oh, and I have Thanksgiving tomorrow. Yeah. Or like, so I'm actually.
That reminds me, I have to pick up the turkey.
Yeah. Did you put it in your fridge to thaw?
I need to brine it. I have so much to do. Who cares about any
so
of this?
I don't think it's confusing to voters. A little bit, I think they're not paying attention. So I do kind of feel like this is a major conversation at the most elite level, Lindsay. Does that make you like it's the people who are
very
running elections? But I also think, man, did the judge do a good job of backing the legislature right into a corner, and this explains why she took so long.
Okay, I want to touch on that a little bit when we come back. I also want to touch on this appeal that the Utah legislature is saying they're going to do an appeal on the full merits, not just a request for an emergency stay on the ruling, but a full appeal of this case. I want to talk about the implications of that from a Supreme Court that has already ruled against the legislature 5-0. When it comes to initiatives,
we have a new Chief Justice.
We may have a new Chief Justice, and we have a new Supreme Court Justice as well with John Nielsen.
So that's 3-2.
So,
okay.
So we will see. So let us take a break. And when we come back, we will dive into all that. Plus, we're going to get into some new Olympic logos and names. And not everyone loves it when we come back. So stay with us. Today, I'm joined by my political analyst, Taylor Morgan, representing the Republican side, and Leah Murray, representing the Democrats side. Is that not accurate? Why are you both giving me faces?
No,
laughing
we'll
at Taylor
it.
Being offended that you called him a Republican.
Okay, well.
Just made my whole day.
Let's pull out the cards, guys.
I wasn't offended. I was honored. I was flattered. So humbled.
Check
and
the voter registration
to be
status.
The good guys to represent the right.
Okay.
Here.
Well, you're here today, either way, because we have we had some big news this week in Utah politics, and that is the legislature's plans for how they plan to try to stop the recent redistricting ruling that creates a really safe Democratic seat in Utah. Obviously, they're not happy about the ruling. They're not happy about the process. Mm-hmm. So now they plan to appeal on not just the ruling, but the merits of this case, basically saying that they don't think that them overturning Prop 4 is even a problem. Guys, what do you make of that? Because the Supreme Court has really already weighed in here and said the legislature cannot overturn initiatives unless they have a compelling government interest. So what argument did they use to say, no, we think we can do this? 5-0, Supreme Court, you're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is a conversation I think we've had for a while, Lindsay and Taylor, and being someone who grew up in a state that did not have initiatives, I think I was the one who was like, and this is the problem, right? So the reason why direct democracy presents such an issue is that you feel like, how do I say, legislative moves are never the last move. So the legislature is absolutely right. Policy evolves. Law changes, right? They've got to be able to adapt. And if we read initiatives as being like, you know, on a
stone
tablet.
They call it a super law.
Yeah, because like that is not going to work. So a little bit, this to me begs the whole question around whether initiatives are even a good way of doing governance.
But I do want to push back a little bit, Taylor, on Leah, and just say that they can change initiatives. They just can't impair the will of the voters. So if it's going to bankrupt the government or it violates the Constitution, that can be changed. They just have to have a compelling government reason.
Well, I think, and again, I don't want to get too far off the rails here politically, but if we look at the intent of the Prop 4, ballot measure and Better Boundaries, the organization behind it, what was the intent there? What was it that voters voted for? Voters voted for a fair redistricting process. Voters voted for an opportunity to have a say in who represents them in the legislature, on the school board, and in Congress. That is how Prop 4 was sold. What we have today, frankly, is the exact opposite of that. This ruling by Judge Gibson, her choice of the plaintiff's map, gives Utah 4 completely non-competitive congressional districts. Now, be as frustrated as you will, Republicans, about District 1. I believe just as big of a problem is the fact that we now have 3 R plus 50 congressional districts. We have non-competitive congressional districts in Utah.
Yeah.
And in those district, candidates are going to message to the extremes, to the fringes in both parties. And the rest of us in the middle, we are going to be ignored because of Judge Gibson.
Right. I think all of that is true. Like, I agree with you. And I would also like to say, but I'm not sure the intent wasn't like getting a Democrat to Congress.
Well, let's be honest. Based on who their funders are, where their money comes from,
right,
it was always a Democratic power grab. The whole goal was to get Ben McAdams elected to Congress. The irony is now that district is way too progressive for Ben to win.
Right. My thing is, I think for years, people felt like there was a power grab in the other direction. Right. When I first got here, Jim Matheson was a Congress member. He was a Democrat. He had a seat that was
very conservative Democrat.
Whatever, but he was still a Democrat. And he had a seat that was pretty much around where all the Democrats in the state kind of live. And it felt like a gerrymander to take that away. Right. Like when they cracked the Democrats. So a little bit, I'm not sure I agree that the intent was competitive or fair. I think the intent was, let's go back to our 1990s district map. Let's have a Democrat go. We feel like we've got about a quarter of the state are Democrats, whatever numbers we're talking about.
I think
about.
What I was trying to say is they sold it. How they sold it, right? How the sponsor sold Prop 4 was saying fair maps and a fair process.
Well,
right?
I think that
is what they told voters. I don't think they were honest about
it. But I brought this question up to the governor this week, and I'll pose the same one to you while we take a look at the weather. I mean, it's like what is the remedy supposed to be if the legislature draws a new remedial map, which they were ordered to do by the court, and the court then deems they violated Prop 4 yet again? Does she supposed to just kick it back to them forever, never, never? They could forever violate Prop 4. Yeah. We would never have a map. Like, what good is having a judicial branch if there's no remedy for when you break the law?
Obviously, that is the role of the judicial branch here. And unfortunately, we have an activist judge who has abandoned the role of the judiciary to play politics
but
in a political response
role?
To the legislature. It is not the role. I believe the role of the judiciary is to
check
politicians,
the legislature,
not act like politicians. Now, I believe Map C, the map the legislature drew, did adhere to the original guidelines of Prop 4. Now, part of the problem is the sponsors of Proposition 4 left their guidelines so vague, so open to legal interpretation. They did so intentionally to try to set up litigation over every map drawing process. That's not honest, and that's not fair.
Leah, you were smirking at something Taylor said in there. What was it?
Could have been anything.
Yeah. Could have been like,
what was it?
Treatise. First of all, I'm not sure, how do I say, when the legislature is operating in bad faith, which is what I think people think happened with Map C, what I think people think happened with them kind of not really abiding what the intent of Prop 4 was, when they basically said, here's the exact same map we've had for 10 years. After in 2018, we passed a proposition asking for better map drawing, right? They did a whole commission. They went up and down the state. They asked people, and the legislature was like, thanks, no thanks. So
let's not forget the Prop 4 sponsors celebrated the compromise they passed in the legislature, SB 200.
They knew they were going to get overturned anyways, so they had to.
That's fair. But I'm saying from a regular voter, right, it doesn't look like they paid attention. Doesn't look like they listened. Then you've got a legislature kind of playing fast and loose a little bit with their relationship with the judiciary, trying to change how we're picking the chief justice. I mean, all that. Again, it's all operating.
You're right.
Not in a vacuum, right? Like,
you're
this
right.
conversation going back and forth. So whether she's activist or not, a little bit she is doing exactly what Lindsay says she should do, which is the judiciary smacking the legislature on the wrist for not operating in what anyone thinks is good faith.
I think that's totally fair. I think you're right. And this is when I talk about the legislature having picked all the wrong battles at the wrong times and having lost all of them. We're saying exactly the same thing. I'm doing my best to try to defend kind of the Republican side of the equation here, but clearly we painted ourselves into this corner on our own, no doubt about it.
Okay, there's so much more to talk about with redistricting, but I want to move to another topic before we go to break, and that is the potential for Governor Cox he says he's writing a book. He's working on a book right now. He's got
running for president.
He's got a book deal. To that point, Taylor, he was very clear in remarks this week that he is not running for president. He said, I know that the first step, everyone says you write a book and then you run for president. This is not that, is what he says, but clearly
you
disagree.
The first step is the NGA chair.
Yes.
Right? So
correct.
First you become the chair of the National Governors Association.
And then you write the
book. Then you write a book.
And then what is the next step? you say you're not running for president. So I think he's right on track.
And somewhere in there, you've got to be on 60 Minutes talking about something, right? Oh, like, so a little bit.
Lines up. Lines right up. And I'm going to be in such big trouble with Governor Cox. Sorry, Governor, you are not running for president. But we all know.
But why is it an issue?
He was so clear. I was in the room. I know what you're saying, and I hear you. And it's very, the optics are bad, but he was very clear that I know.
I am not interested in running for president at this time.
At this time? He didn't say at this time. He said, I'm not. And he even said, if someone asked me to, I would deny it. You know, I would not do it. I will not be the nominee.
He's
like,
got to figure out a better freaking logo for the Olympics if he's going to run for president. Let me put it that way.
Okay, let's pause there because we are going to get into the Olympics in a minute. We've got to take a break. But yes, a new Olympic logo and name was unveiled this week and people have feelings.
It's terrible.
We're going to talk about that when we come back. Stay with us.
Now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, welcome back. We appreciate you being here for this new format today. Actually, this is a format we do on our streaming show twice a week. So if you like this kind of content with political analysis, I'd invite you to download the News for Utah Plus app. It's on Amazon Fire, Roku, and Apple TV. Just search in your search bar for News for Utah. I'm joined today by Taylor Morgan and Leah Murray, representing different sides of the aisle here to weigh in on some local political issues. I want to get to the Olympics because there was a big announcement this week that we changed the name to Utah 2034. And we have a new logo, which people have feelings about. Taylor, Leah, go.
Wow. I have already texted Mitt Romney and asked him to save us all from this. We have 3,000 days to go until the Olympics, but there are 10,000 reasons to change this logo. It is probably the worst logo in the history of logos. I'm saying it's worse even than
Is it
than
egregiously
the
worst
It
logo?
Is egregious. Yeah. You think District 1 is terrible. This eclipses it by a mile.
Okay,
this is the worst logo I've ever seen, Lindsay. Not
that's
that.
Not,
that's just
that's
the
a
Olympic
good
rings.
Right.
Let's go back up.
Leah,
let's pull, yes.
Before we get to your
wow.
take, Leah, I want to play what the governor said about it because I asked him. First of all, I asked him if there was anything political with taking Salt Lake City out of the name because there has been some beef in the past with Salt Lake City and the state. He denied that there was any sort of political motivations for this, so we will definitely take him at his word. But when it comes to the feedback on the logo, he recognized that not everyone is happy with it.
I'm really grateful that the logo has united Utah. It's really brought people together because everyone seems to not like it. And so it's great to see the way it really, really brought us together. Sometimes that's what it takes. I will just say this. It is a transition logo. And so the final logo won't come out until 2029.
Leah, why the big rollout for a transitional logo then?
Well, that must be a course correction, right? I mean, yeah. So I showed the logo yesterday to my 16-year-old son because I did think maybe there's something Gen Z sees, right?
Like if it had a 6-7 in it, it would be fine.
Right, maybe it'd be fine. But he was like, what is that? Hieroglyphics? Literally is what he said. So, right, I just feel like, you know, it's clearly not, resonating, right, with people. So
good response by the governor. Great response by Spencer Cox right there, kind of responding to the fact that no one likes this logo. I will just say, right there, demonstrating his chops with the press. Clearly a potential presidential candidate is what I saw right there.
Can I also just add, which is not, oh my gosh, just smack me because this is just me thinking this. But do we change it to Utah not because we're mad at this city, but because we're running for president and we're trying to elevate the state of Utah in the national conversation?
Wow, getting the tinfoil hat on right there.
The governor did address that. He said, no, it's to bring all the communities together because we have communities outside of Salt Lake City that are hosting events. So it's not just
that was also
Salt
the case
Olympics.
Back in 2002. More Olympic events were held outside of Salt Lake City than were held within Utah's capital city. One of the fundamental rules of branding 101 is you don't reinvent or rebrand when you don't have to. Salt Lake 2034 is the brand. this logo is just a hot mess. And like the governor said and backpedaled and I think covered a bit there, it is a transitional logo. I think we need to transition away from this logo right away and not wait 4 years to do it. I think Utahns are really unhappy with it. We need another go.
Just when you walk in the airport, they'll hand you 3D glasses and you put them on to view the logo. And
because it's I hope they put it all the way in Terminal B so I don't have to ever ever walk past that terrible logo.
Taylor Morgan, Leah Murray, thank you for being here today and for your insights. We really appreciate it. As always, we tape this show Tuesdays and Thursdays over on our streaming channel, News for Utah Plus, so we'd love if you come find us there so we chat more about political headlines. We also, the show is in podcast form, so wherever you podcast, just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres, and you will find us there. I'm also on social media. I spelled my name with an A, Lindsay with an A, so you can find us there. We thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week.